guests coming along this weekend. Coraline Symphony tonight, tomorrow afternoon, and then the Spokane Symphony tomorrow night and Sunday afternoon. So the beautiful thing about this is they do not conflict. You can have a weekend of music making and terrific symphonic music making. We're going to spend time with both in the hour, and right now let's hear a little bit of the piano playing of Renato Fabbro, who from the Sarasota Music Festival was playing some Mozart chamber music. A little bit of the feeling of the high level of music making of Renato Fabbro, the pianist who's playing with the Coeur d'Alene Symphony tonight, tomorrow afternoon, from the Sarasota Music Festival, the opening of the Mozart Kegelstadt Trio with clarinet and viola. And so, Renato, or Ron, welcome to Spokane. I guess you've been here before.
I have.
Yeah. Yes. In what context?
I've adjudicated several times out here, and I have also accompanied my own students for the young artist competition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
And because you're currently living in Portland.
Correct.
Yeah. And so, and you're staying around or coming back for Music Fest Northwest?
Yes. Next week I'll be back for the Music Fest to adjudicate. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, it's handy being at least in the Northwest.
Yes, definitely.
You're not too far away. Anyway, you as pianist, and you're doing Grieg with the Coeur d'Alene Symphony, but kind of trace you as pianist. We just heard you as a chamber music player. What were your childhood piano experiences? Just another kid taking piano lessons with a good teacher?
Yes. It was the only thing I really loved, and I couldn't see myself doing anything else, so I really stuck with it, and I was one of those kids that didn't have to be told to practice, and I really enjoyed it. So
nice. Yeah. And so then what was your path from kind of high school into college and into a career?
I went and just did a Bachelor of Music at University of Colorado, and then
Are you from Colorado?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, from Grand Junction, Colorado.
Yeah. And so was there a logical, was there specifically a music teacher there at the university? A piano teacher or something, or just simply a good music department?
Both. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one teacher in particular that I wanted to study with, Larry Graham. And so I went and studied with him, and it was very inspiring, and it really he took me to the next level. And from there, it was just on through to do a master's and then eventually a DMA.
Maybe an overly obvious question, but just how important is a good teacher for a young student? Can you do it in spite of a not so good teacher, or is it essential? Or what do you think about that relationship?
I was trying to think of how I would answer your first question, because where I grew up in my hometown, there really weren't any good teachers at the time. You know, and I loved my initial teacher to death, but it was not the same as what I had when I first went into my undergraduate studies. But yes, I feel like I still made it work, even with that background.
Yeah. And so then once you got a teacher in college, did that person have to kind of reset some technique and start you over in some painful ways?
Yeah, and it was kind of an epiphany for me in many ways, all these things that I was missing. But, I mean, he really just took me to this next level in actually a fairly short amount of time. So a great teacher does make a big difference. But, you know, I feel like I kind of persevered anyway. I was really passionate about it. So.
I presume the silver lining of that cloud was that you learned a lot about teaching.
Yes, exactly. Like what I need to pass on to my students and all the hands-on, the things that you need to really explain in detail and be very clear about.
And how to manage change for a student, right?
Exactly.
Like to teach a new technique, because isn't there resistance there sometimes?
Oh, yes. And sometimes you have to fix problems if they had been taught incorrectly. So being able to really explain the physical methods of tone production and technique, that's something that I missed when I was growing up in my hometown. So I really make sure that I instill that in my students.
Nice.
I show them how to do it. Yeah.
So the combination of teaching and performing, are you able to maintain a good balance, a satisfying to you balance in your life?
It is satisfying to me. It is more on the teaching side, but I love it. It's so rewarding to me. It's very creative. And I love seeing my students do well. It's really exciting to me seeing them do things that I never did when I was in high school. And they're playing with symphonies and that sort of thing. So that's very rewarding. And I still manage to do some performing like this. It'd be great if I could do more. But yeah, it is a tricky balance.
Yeah. So the Greek Concerto, had you performed it before?
I have not.
So this is a new tune for you.
Yes, it's new.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that process. How long ago did you intensely start? What did you go through in preparing for this performance?
Oh, boy. when was it I started? It was last year, around the summertime, that I started working on it. I just learned it on my own, and I worked with an accompanist in Portland and had rehearsals with him as well, did some mock performances to help prepare for this. So that really helped.
Yeah. And then Jorge Uzgetaki, good morning, Jorge.
Good morning, Ben.
And in bringing you into the equation, now you're also a pianist, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, and so you can probably relate to this piece from inside and outside.
For sure,
At the same time. Have you happened to play it?
Actually, I have not, but I grew up listening to it. You know, one of my dreams was actually to get to play it, and then pedagogically my teacher decided to go to different pieces. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sooner than I knew, I was already conducting more than piano. And so I never actually have had the opportunity. I hope one day I can actually go and learn it myself.
Yeah, are you able to find any time in your really busy schedule between many things to work at your piano playing?
I put some time every day, you know.
Oh, you do.
I was telling Renato just earlier that it's one of those painful things of the profession. You do something, you have to give up doing as much time on something that you love for something else that you love even more, you know.
Yeah, like you give up an hour of sleep to get up and practice the piano.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, something like that. Well, let's. What about the Greek Piano Concerto? Let's just kind of get into an open discussion. Is there one approach to the Greek Piano Concerto? What's the history of performance of this piece? Has it been interpreted in a lot of different ways? Or because surely, Renato, you listened to a few and got a few.
Oh yes.
You found the extremes of what people have done with this.
Oh yes.
Talk about approaches
Many
to this piece.
Many different approaches, yeah. Leon Fleischer's recording is a very well-known one. But boy, I've listened to Jean-Yves Thibaudet, who else? Christian Zimmermann. Mm-hmm. His tempos are much more on the slow side. Thibaudet, much more on the fast side. So there's a wide range of approaches for.
Let's take a minute just about tempos. Do you do that because you believe in it, or because you can, or something else? And you know, either of you to jump in on tempo decisions on something like that when there is latitude available.
Me personally.
Well, yeah. I mean, how do you feel?
Sure. I mean, yeah. If you can toss off a passage and it sounds great, why not? And if it fits the style to be bravura and virtuoso, then I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. But I show some caution in some places because there's some thorny passages, of course. But
And what about you, Jorge? Because you can relate to it as a pianist, but then you also have to make it work as a whole and as a conductor. What about these things of being confronted with different tempos by a soloist?
Well, for sure. I mean, the Greek Piano Concerto is a great example of a virtuosic piece in which, you know, pianists may have the tendencies to want to show up. And, you know, yesterday we had the opportunity to rehearse already with Renato. Mm-hmm. And what Renato shows is, like, he can play with bravura and, you know, with fast tempos, and at the same time contrast that with a lot of refined touch in the slower sections. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what it's all about, you know, that contrast and shaping a very romantic type of sound.
And so that's what we get to hear tonight and tomorrow afternoon. Also, there's a question about Grieg, that he was so famous for miniatures and for little short pieces and for all of the little movements of Peer Gynt and all of his lovely short piano pieces, but he didn't write that many large works, you know, a really good violin sonata and this piece. Do you have a sense of Grieg? Does the whole piece hold together as a completely cohesive work?
Oh, I think so. I think that's why it has stood the test of time, too. The form is really wonderful. And then the last movement, the way he brings back the middle section theme in this triumphant finale, you know, and he also takes the opening theme, puts into a waltz just before the coda, and it's in the parallel major key. It ties everything together very well. I think it's a very successful piece.
Nice. What do you think about this whole question? Have you had to encounter? You've probably not really encountered large Grieg works, have you, before?
Well, I mean, actually, this was the first opportunity that I had to do, you know, the symphonic dances as well, mm-hmm. which we're doing in the program, but also the whole piano concerto. I had been able to conduct just the third movement of it before, but now the whole piece. And I have done, you know, Peer Gynt, and I had done Sigurd Jorsalfar, which is another very beautiful suite. But this is the first time I have to do these two major works, mm-hmm. as the piano concerto and the symphonic dances. Mm-hmm. But I do have to say that I do think the piano concerto is really a piece of great level compositionally, because people tend to also make it a little bit from the superficial side, because it is so beautiful that one gets too involved emotionally with it. But still, it is a masterwork in the way it's, like Renato explained, the way it's just built.
Yeah. And then let's keep talking about the Greek symphonic dances, because that's the other major work on the program. Not real well known, not played a lot. We know the Rachmaninoff symphonic dances a lot better and more recently around here. But talk about the Greek symphonic dances.
You know, I am also very new to the piece, mm-hmm. before this opportunity. And it's also another gem. You know, I'm mesmerized by Greek's really amazing way to make such intimate folkloric music in express it in such a cosmopolitan way, making sure that everybody from any part of the world is able to feel so at home with the music of his country, you know. And it's really wonderful the way he does it, how he utilizes these very particular dances and you know, presents it in a way that we will fall in love with them, you know, automatically after we listen to them.
Yeah. How many dances comprise the suite?
Four.
Four dances. Mm-hmm. So does it have some similarity to a four-movement symphony, just in the contrast of the dances, or not?
It sort of does, except, you know, all of the dances are in ABA form. So, and that's one of the reasons, I believe, why we fall in love with them, because by the time we listen to it the second time, we already know how it works. Mm-hmm. And so it does in that it's four movements. It does that it's about, you know, it's a little bit more than half an hour in length. And it also works, it's very similar also in that in the instrumentation. It has a full symphonic orchestration, but it's very particular in that it's really more of a of dance-like. You know, he presents basically a dance, and he contrasts the dance with one of his songs that he considers is typical of his native country.
Oh, so the B section, it tends to be a song.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa, but there will be a song and a dance within every movement.
Yes, absolutely. That's how he makes it work, because one of the dances is going to be very energetic and all of a sudden a very intimate song, or vice versa.
One can see why that would be so satisfying to an audience to hear. Let's check in a little bit on some of the other things you do. Jorge Uzguiriki, we know from his work with the Spokane Symphony, and that's what's brought you to this area. But as long as you're here, let's talk just a little bit about the music education program that you've had running this year. Since last year. How's that going, and what's going on with it?
Well, we recently, a couple of weeks ago, we had our spring concert, or let's say like the end of the winter concert. We call it the spring concert. It was really fascinating to see the progress that the kids have done. You know, as we have talked before here, we started with 1 5th grade, you know, in one school. Now we're going from 1st grade to 8th grade of 10 different schools.
Wow.
So we have expanded, you know, very quickly. But we actually have hired all of the personnel that we need in a way that we can make it work. And actually, some of this, of course, as you know, are Spokane Symphony musicians. Mm-hmm. And we also have musicians from the community. And we have a few Coeur d'Alene Symphony members that also work for the program. Mm-hmm. So it's actually really a Northwest thing rather than just a Spokane-based. It's now growing, you know. The Spokane Symphony has made it grow into something bigger than just a regional thing.
And it's a collaboration with the schools, too.
Absolutely, with the Spokane Public Schools.
Yeah. And then it was motivated by a grant. I assume that's then the challenge to keep it funded in every way as it grows?
We have, actually. It was always the question, you know. And so far, it just seems to be growing. And we recently got a $10,000 donation from a very generous person, and we are continue searching for more and more ways to continue the growing the program.
And remind me, what's the name of the program?
Music Innovates.
Music Innovates, that's right. The program that Jorge has been spearheading, along with plenty of help from the Spokane Symphony. So that's that part of your life, and then your ongoing work with the symphony, and you're scheduled for performances and things next year, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And, actually, there's a couple of new shows that I will be doing that I hadn't done before with Spokane, which is the Nutcracker.
Oh, it'll be your turn to do the Nutcracker.
I will get the opportunity, which is very exciting. Also, the West Side Story. We're doing the West Side Story, and I'm going to be able to do that, you know, with the whole production.
You mean so that it's in the mode that you folks have been doing, where you will play the entire score?
That is correct.
Wow, and something that's due to technological wonders now can be done. That's pretty amazing, Jorge, and that. But here with the Coeur d'Alene Symphony, and that's it's a great feeling of the orchestras, such as the Coeur d'Alene Symphony, is it? And their music making, their part in the community.
Absolutely, Vernice. Yeah. It's really amazing to go to a rehearsal when you feel that every single person there is there because it really feels a deep love to music and is willing to just do anything that it takes to make, you know, the outcome of the performance as great as possible. All of the things that they have to do in order to be there. A lot of these musicians come from, very far away places, and they will drive at night, and they will get home. Sometimes they have to drive even a couple of hours to get back home after, you know, we finish at 9 or 10 almost. And so it's really amazing how much they really love to play. And I think it will be shown tonight in the concert.
Mm-hmm. That's tonight at 7:30 at the Kroc Center, and then tomorrow at 2 at the Kroc Center in Coeur d'Alene is the Coeur d'Alene Symphony. And then back to Renato, you're doing a master class tomorrow morning at 10 there at the Kroc Center. How does a masterclass work? And I don't mean kind of what's the mechanism, but what's the result? What can you accomplish for the people who are playing for you and then for the people who are in the audience watching?
Well, sort of a mini lesson. Obviously, you'd love to have as much time as a regular lesson, but you only get a certain amount of time with the students. But you give them some tips on how to improve their piece, technically, musically, and the teachers can be there to observe as well, even the parents, and it helps them with their teaching as well to get another perspective on what could be done a little bit better.
Kind of a master teacher.
Yes.
Approach.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's tomorrow at 10 at the Crux Center, and while the performers are already set, it's free and open to the public just to show up and encounter that. So, Renato Fabro, thank you for coming to our area, and we'll look forward to you being here next week.
Thank you for having me.
And always, Jorge, it's great to have you within our community.
Thank you so much, Ryan.